Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2016. If you're joining us off-net or online, this is the Senate Finance Committee. We're meeting in Juneau, Alaska, in room 532, the state capitol. I'm Senator Anna McKinnon, co-chair of Finance. With me this morning, Senator Dunleavy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
We should be joined shortly. Welcome, Senator McKinnon. Welcome, Senator Bishop. Welcome, Senator Machicki. On today's agenda is SB 114, the Permanent Fund Earnings Deposit Accounts. Is there anyone here to present the bill? Anyone at all? Seeing and hearing none, brief please. We're back on the record. Again, it is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2016. Before the committee is SB 114, Permanent Fund Earnings Deposit Accounts. If I can invite Senator McGuire to the table to introduce SB 114.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee. It's an honor to be here today to talk to all of you about 114. I know you heard from the governor's team yesterday about their proposal to close the fiscal gap. Madam Chair, you've asked me not to spend too much time talking about the history of the permanent fund itself, where it came from, et cetera. So I've modified this presentation this morning to reflect the sophistication of the committee and the level of knowledge you all have. But there are just a couple of slides for the public watching to remind them. Does this go this way? There we go. Just to remind them where we are and why we're even talking about the issue we are today, and then I will get, Madam Chair, as you requested, into the mechanics. So the first issue, of course, is their fiscal deficit. All of you here as members of the Senate Finance Committee clearly know that. And the revenue model showing that if oil prices do not rebound and are not projected to, the savings of the state of Alaska will be gone within the next 2 years. That was the point, Madam Chair, for putting 114 together. In January of last year, I approached many members of the Senate and said that I had sort of a bucket of components, and which of them did people seem to like, and by April, this was the draft bill that was introduced. I'll go through some of the changes. Here's our fiscal situation in fiscal year 16. Again, as all of you know, but just for the public watching, I like this chart because it makes it fairly simple to see. There's the output in the blue, and there is there's the amount of revenue coming in to cover that. So almost $4 of every of the five coming out of our savings. Here's another chart that shows it a little bit differently. I like to say it as rough numbers of $7 billion and $7 billion. You all talk about it that same way. The blue and the green show that. So that if we do nothing today and don't materially change the way the permanent fund calculates a payout to divide some of it between a payout of the dividends in the state of Alaska, the legislature will have no choice but to go into our savings accounts. We have two of them, the Constitutional Budget Reserve and the Earnings Reserve account, and this is what it looks like as they drain. By fiscal year 18, of course, you all have discussed this, will be squarely into the Earnings Reserve account. And the last point to make about the Earnings Reserve account for the public, again, listening, is that once that Earnings Reserve account goes down to zero, the concern we all have is that your lifeline to the rest of the fiscal stability for the state has now evaporated. And now you're forced to go into the corpus itself through constitutional mechanisms in a very difficult conversation, of course, with the public. So what we want to try to do today is change the material way that we pay it out while we still have the Earnings Reserve account in play, so that it's that lifeline. This next slide,
yes. If you could pause just for a moment.
Yes.
Senator Kelly, welcome to Senate Finance. I know you had other meetings this morning, so we appreciate you getting up
here.
Thank you.
And again, Madam Chair, respecting your desire not to have the bulk of what we've presented, but just again trying to remind anyone that might be tuning in Alaska to this today, maybe for the first time, why is your legislature considering a material change to the payout of the dividend program? And this is the most important slide, Madam Chair and Mr. Co-Chairman, that I like to show Alaskans. If you like your dividend, you like this bill or something like it, because combined with the last chart that shows you how the legislature will be forced to drain through the CBR and then the ERA, you'll see that the challenge will come for the legislature in fiscal year 19, 20, and 21, when the legislature would be faced with the challenge of paying a dividend and not being able to fund any of the government. So the choice today could be to adopt 114 or something like it, a percentage of market value, that would allow for a dividend program to continue into the future. And I do think that was part of the original thought of sharing generational wealth into the future. In crafting 114, I always like to tell lawmakers when I'm bringing a bill forward what my principles were. Senator Kelly, you and I have had these conversations before. You can get off on a track because you accept amendments or things that go down, and you have to remind yourself, why did you introduce it? Just so that members here understand my principles to retain a dividend. Again, recognizing that that's been an important part of the economy, it's also become a very important lifeline for people living in rural Alaska and people who live in middle to below middle class income households. It's also, as I stated at the beginning, one of the most important ways to share intergenerational wealth. Without making the dividend dependent on the size of state spending, that's a sub of that, I wanted to reduce the volatility of the state budget. I wanted to clearly expose the size and cost of government so that downward pressure would ensure Alaskans would begin an honest assessment of needs versus wants. There's an interesting editorial, for example, in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner yesterday stating that only the plans that propose to close the entire gap today are the ones that should be considered. I respectfully disagree and simply state that there is also some merit in trying to close a majority of the gap, $1 billion problem with $1 billion fix and perhaps some other elements that could come in, but that if we do solve it all in the way the governor is proposing and others, and presume that the size and cost of government is what it is today, I'm not sure that downward pressure will continue in the future. Number four, again, allowing maximum use of our wealth over generations so that the benefits and burdens are equally shared. Again, I don't think it's fair for our one generation to use up all of the benefits of this non-renewable resource at this high, what has been a high time of volume and prices, so that our grandchildren and children don't have that benefit in the future. And it should be simple and easy to implement. I would note that as the bill has gone through the committee process and amendments have been made, it's become less simple and less easy, and that's part of what we were working on in my office this morning. 5 stages of grief, just really quickly, I throw this in, people really like it. You can apply this to almost any situation in the state where there's a crisis, but I think it really applies here, and certainly to almost every individual neighbor I've talked to about the fiscal gap. Wanting to deny that it's happening, believing and hoping that, you know, those $100 prices will come back again tomorrow, and that the volume will come back too, and that we'll be okay, or that somehow there's a pot of money the legislature has been holding on to that will reveal itself. Or that the size of government is so big that, you know, we can really go in there now and make those tough decisions and not cut really, really meaningful state services. Anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. Okay, here on this slide is just a reminder to the public that there are three proposals looking at, again, the billion-dollar part of the solution. There are other solutions out there. There are income tax proposals and sales tax proposals, et cetera. But you have Senate Bill 128, the governor's bill, which is an annuity model. You have Senate Bill 114 in front of you, which is a percentage of market value, and then one over in the House side, two over in the House side, actually, that are percentage of market values. In my opinion, we have to continue with strategic cuts to the budget, but we can't cut our way out of it, and that's why you need a fundamental restructure to the permanent fund. This is a great chart just to show that if you adopted every single one of the revenue measures contained in the Governor's Sustainable Alaska Plan, that would amount to $457 million a year, Madam Chairwoman. And over there in the purple is the size of the current deficit. This is just an easy chart to show Alaskans why you can't revenue raise your way out of it without using the permanent fund. This is a nice chart, too, just to show Alaskans, actually the largest amount of spending from your government is to the dividend. It's $1.4 billion last year, and again, Madam Chair, as you know, there's an additional amount that goes on top of that for inflation proofing, anywhere between $700 million and $1 billion, so really the number's about 2.4. I think this is a great chart because often Alaskans will say to me, Liesl, you know, again, you guys are spending too much money. Where are you spending it? And I do point to education and HESS as the two largest cost drivers, but then I let them know that the dividend program actually ends up being the biggest. Here's a structure right now, the current cash flow. You all know this. I don't have to show you, but again, if there's public tuning in, just to remind us that we have a general fund, we have a permanent fund principal, and again, that's the part that was constitutionally created, not the dividend. It's not the permanent fund dividend program or the dividend corpus or any of that. It's the permanent fund. It has about $52 billion in it. It's our largest state asset today. Up to this moment, that gray box, the earnings reserve account, which was created by the 12th Alaska Legislature in 1980, has done nothing more than pay out dividends to every man, woman, and child in the state of Alaska as a result of a United States Supreme Court decision ruling that the legislature's plan in 1980 violated the 14th Amendment of equal rights under the law. That original plan, the Alaska Legislature in 1980 proposed, would have given a dividend based on your share of residency. Dividend is paid out, as you see on the bottom, and the royalties are divided 30 and 69.5, 69.5 going into the general fund and 30% going into the permanent fund principal. Under the bill, as you see before you, this is the way our payout would look here in the state of Alaska. You would continue to have 25% of the royalties go into the permanent fund principal. That's required, Madam Chair, as you know, and members of the committee. That is the only inflation-proofing requirement contained in the Constitution. That stays, of course. The earnings reserve account below gives a 4.5% percentage of market value payout annually to the general fund over on the right. That point there is the part of the bill that is the most important if you're considering budget stabilization, as you know. Over in the general fund, you continue to receive production taxes and less volatile revenues, such as alcohol taxes, tobacco taxes, etc. Your constitutional budget reserve under 114 remains the same and is there to draw on when necessary to fill deficits in a three-quarter vote. Nothing has changed there. This is an important part about our bill as well. The governor's bill, as you heard yesterday, has some material changes to these funds themselves, what they look like, and so forth. The earnings reserve account under the governor's bill, for all intents and purposes, becomes a general fund. Under this bill, everything remains the same. Final point on this slide, under the earnings reserve account, is a little box there for the dividend now. And as you recall from the slide before, the earnings reserve account, up to this point, Madam Chair, has only paid out a dividend. So the new way of paying out a dividend is to take 15% of the statutory net income of the earnings reserve account, 2% of the value of the constitutional budget reserve, and 15% of the royalties. The thinking on this, the original bill had the dividend coming exclusively from 74.5% of all of the future rents and royalties of subsurface earnings. And again, I point out that this committee will do great work. I know that. And as you look between the models, there is simplicity in that original model, and there's a philosophy in that original model I liked, which is to connect future dividend recipients to the source of that revenue. And my opinion, Madam Chair, is that that is necessary to grow our economy and to consider the size and cost of government in reasonable ways. Up to this point, it's become sort of an ethereal source of revenue, knowing that now we have more Alaskans that have lived in Alaska less than 7 years than those that have. And so many Alaskans didn't live through the 80s recession. They don't know that it's just the permanent fund corpus that's constitutionally protected, and they're not even sure where the source of revenues come from. This new method of paying it out comes in from an amendment that Senator Coghill and I worked on together with David Teal. And what it was meant to do is incorporate that fundamental principle of tracking the dividend with the fiscal health of the state. Some would argue today that paying out a $2,000 dividend while the state is in a deficit might seem to be out of balance. But it would stabilize it a little more by taking not just royalties, but also 15% of the earnings reserve account and then 2% of the constitutional budget reserve. So the attempt was twofold. To stabilize it a little more, some Alaskans were concerned that paying the dividend out of only royalties might make it too volatile, high upside but a low side. And then there was a concern also from Senator Coghill, very, very well founded, that Alaskans wanted to know that the dividend was still a permanent fund dividend, that it was still coming out of the permanent fund in some part, so that there were Alaskans that were confused about this new dividend, and it was creating a debate issue. So that is the current mechanism right now under 114. What you'll see in the modeling, Madam Chairwoman, is that materially the numbers don't change very much. They do change a little more when it comes to the dividend. The dividend becomes a bit more consistent over time. But in terms of the revenue calculation to the state of Alaska, it's still in that $2 billion range. Getting into these final slides, the overall effect, Senate Bill 114, if adopted today, would reduce the deficit by roughly $2 billion. That goes a long way toward reducing the problem that we have. It reduces the volatility in the budget that we have from having relied almost exclusively on a single commodity that's in the futures index. It grows the permanent fund into the future to maintain its buying power for future generations. It preserves the dividend with a minimum of $1,000. Again, this is a decision point for this committee. I have another slide in here that I'll show you what the material difference would be between keeping that at 1,000 and also holding it harmless this year. It reduces the constitutional budget reserve draw to cover the deficit. It helps maintain good state credit rating. And Madam Chair, you and the Senate Finance Committee worry about this every day in a way that I'm honored to have one of the best Senate Finance Committees, by the way, I've ever seen. But you guys get up, you look at the price of oil every day, you look at the volume, but you're also looking at our credit rating and those signals that are going out. Why they're important, I just want to emphasize again for the public listening, this isn't just about the government protecting its own hen coop and worrying about funding our projects. This is the fact that these state services like good roads and public safety and public schooling maintain the quality of life that Alaskans deserve and expect. That is important when you're attracting and recruiting young people that would want to grow their business in this state. That's important for the private sector. Private sector looking at those signals, and if the state begins to tank in our credit rating and interest rates go up, lending begins, there's a chilling effect on lending, capital budgets go down for those private sector companies out there. Now you see layoffs and hiring freezes, and pretty soon then you also see, of course, the value of our homes going down. So that's why it's important to every Alaskan, not just those of us here in the government. Finally, a material difference about this bill from the other two is it maintains downward pressure on state spending. This is a slide, just Madam Chair, I like to throw in every presentation to remind Alaskans that historically 34 dividends have been paid. 18 of them have been less than $1,000. 16 have been greater than $1,000. But again, if more than 50% of the state population have only lived here 7 years or less, this is an important slide as we go through this dialogue. I have heard people say, you're proposing to cut my dividend in half. That is not accurate. The dividend right now is paid on a five-year rolling average. What we're proposing to do is change the material calculation of how the division would be between funding some basic state government services and a payout of the dividend, but it's not accurate to say it's about cutting the dividend in half. Again, the size of the dividend itself, just to show on a chart basis, under 114 with a $1,000 minimum dividend in the blue, you see what that would look like. If you were to maintain the five-year rolling averages, there's the status quo. But then on the right, I also like to show again that first chart, which shows you that the status quo's realistic end will come in fiscal year 22. The decision for all of you here will actually really come, I think, in fiscal year 19, as I mentioned, because you will have already used every dollar in the CBR, and now you'll be forced to go into the earnings reserve account. There's a huge part of why that is that I haven't talked about today, and that's called revenue. And you guys are all talking about this, but in the charts that I've used in the past, I use a $1 billion placeholder for revenue. We all understand that based on the way that our current oil and gas tax system is playing out at below $40 oil prices, Madam Chair and members of this committee, as you know, that $1 billion revenue is no longer a guarantee. It's actually either below $1 billion or to $1 billion, but what we understand now is that we have less money to work with than we thought because of these low oil prices that we're facing. So I think in fiscal year 19, that's when, if we did nothing today, the legislature, having brought in that smaller amount of revenue, having eaten through the CBR, will now say, we only have the earnings reserve account that we can use statutorily, and you will get to that position where the dividend will end.
Senator Michicki has a question.
Yes.
Senator Michicki.
I just think it's an important point to make, Madam Chair, and Senator McGuire, that all of the modeling we're seeing is assuming a similar price of oil out into the future, which I think is a healthy way to look at it, which is why I like this year's revenue forecast. But anyway, I think that's an important point.
Senator McGuire.
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator Michicki. They do. And I want to point that out, that all three of us carrying these bills and Representative Millett as well. We talk, our teams talk on regular bases. Even though we may disagree on how our individual bills look, we all make sure that we're sharing our modeling and our basic assumptions to the benefit of the state. Again, this just shows the status quo. I love this chart on the right, Madam Chair, again, just to show members of the public what that gap looks like. Status quo budget, yes, we're going to bring that red line down. Of course we will. But you can't bring it down much below $4 billion without major structural changes, which, of course, we're working on. The revenue line under this current presentation is showing us, anywhere between $1 billion and $2 billion. Again, I've already explained what the problem is there. On the left, what you see in Senate Bill 114 is that leveling that we're looking for. We're trying to find a place where the state government, again, our bond ratings can stabilize. We can move forward into the future using a little bit of revenue, a little bit of earnings reserve account, and the CBR. This slide is just on inflation proofing to show that, as you know, Madam Chair, the percentage of market value approach itself is meant to inflation proof as a whole. That's why it's used by endowments all over the world, whether it's for educational models or for private sector interests to grow equity. But we also have the 25% coming in from royalties, and the bill has an additional principle which this committee is free to keep in or pull out, which provides for additional inflation proofing if the principal of the ERA is four times the size of the POMV draw. Again, this is one of those levers and buttons that you all are free to remove. Why is inflation proofing important? Of course, it's to maintain and grow the size of that corpus, because that will be our major asset into the future. That is that rainy day account, thank goodness, that was put aside for us to survive into the future. There is a review oversight mechanism that was put in. We took this from the governor's bill. We liked it. You may or may not like this. You're going to hear opinions about this. It says, each year on or before the 30th of January, the Commissioner of Revenue may consult with the Permanent Fund Board and recommend adjustments to the percentages of money appropriated to that dividend. And then again, the Commissioner of Revenue shall provide the legislature a report that evaluates the sufficiency of the assets in the earnings reserve account. And it also evaluates the amount projected to be distributed to the general fund. You know, I like reviews. I like us to go back and have something that jogs our memory. The downside, of course, we all know, no different than a sunset or a mandatory review, is it can politicize the issue. And if we've made difficult decisions, it can put us right back into that political conundrum again. So that's for this committee to decide. I just pointed out. Revenue limitations. This is very important to me. The original version of 114, as introduced in April of last year, purposefully left out a method of constraining growth of the size of government, because I wanted the Senate to put its fingerprints on it and the House as well. The original bill, and again, this is a sound model that's been run by David Teal, contained a revenue limitation that I thought was a little simpler. It simply said that government, the amount of the appropriation of all of the different pots that come in can't exceed 110% of the last appropriation. So material downward pressure by 10%. This amendment came from the Senate State Affairs Committee, and the chairman of that committee, Senator Stoltz, he prefers this mechanism, and it does work. That your guys are modeling it right now, fine-tuning it, but the principle of it is that for oil revenue over $1 billion, there's a corresponding reduction in the percentage of market value draw. The principles behind it is that it improves the sustainability of payouts from the earnings reserve account. It reduces the risk of increasing spending in high years of petroleum revenue. It reduces the volatility in budget process for the UGF expenditures. The principles behind this amendment are great, and they're similar to the ones that were originally in 114. It makes the percentage of market value an even better model. You're going to hear me argue, I think it's a better model than the annuity plan, but I think without some kind of constraint on spending, I think it becomes more volatile because you do benefit from those high times. Madam Chair, you and I have lived here, along with others on this committee, in times where oil did rebound and the volume was high enough that we did bring in a lot more money, and it is true that the legislature saved a lot of that. And our statutory budget savings reserve has saved us over the last 4 years, but it's also true that the legislature spent quite a bit of money. I think in order for the public to really have faith and trust in their legislature as we begin to materially change these things, like this permanent fund, we've got to let them know that should oil prices rebound in the future, should some of these excellent proposals in the Brooks Range, Moose's Tooth, Point Thompson come into fruition, I believe they will, that we will protect them. So you can see how the chart works. The material problem with this particular method of a spending cap is that what you can see is that $3.5 billion, you no longer have downward pressure. That the way it is currently drafted, there is no material reduction in the percentage market value at that approach. So it works well in the $1, $2, and $3 billion range, but when you get up to 3.5, the model no longer works to constrain in an effective way. And so that's, again, for this committee to think about whether they like the original method or this method modified. Again, just to remind you all, in explaining even to people who might reach out to you today, although I would like to compliment the Alaskan public, very smart, and I would say that the kinds of emails we're getting now are very different than what they were a year ago. They're very thoughtful, and people understand there's a problem, and now they're starting to talk about, in the stages of grief, they're bargaining, what they're willing to accept, what part of a dividend they'd like to keep, what part of taxes they're willing to pay. So what 114 is not, it is not a rate on the permanent fund. There is no constitutional change in this bill to invade the corpus of the permanent fund. It remains. It only draws from the earnings reserve account. It's not a way for the government to increase spending. Again, it has the spending limitations. And again, it does not purport to complete the entire package, assuming a size and cost of government. It's not a dividend killer. It's the exact opposite. In my opinion, having looked at it every possible way and consulted with every economist that I know in this state, it is the only way to maintain a dividend to go to Alaskans. It is a way to share the risks and rewards for the state's fiscal health. It's a way to protect the dividend into the future. It's a way to assure that services we enjoy, basic services, continue to be provided. Here are the major policy calls, just a few that I see. I don't purport to tell you what they all are. Of course, Madam Chair, they come up by individual members, but here are some that I just wanted to flag for you. The first, between yesterday and today, you're seeing the most obvious big decision you have to make. Will this committee decide to restructure the permanent fund based on a percentage of market value payout or a sovereign wealth model? Next, revenue limitation. If you go with a percentage of market value approach, it's important to have a revenue limitation. The sovereign wealth model, I would say that is one thing the sovereign wealth model has that I do like. It guarantees the size and cost of government. I don't prefer, but in doing that, it has a specific draw that comes out. So if you're going to go with a POMV, you need a revenue limitation. Which of those you choose is up to this committee. What percent of the POMV draw do you want? And we originally had it at 5%. We now have it at 4.5%. Representative Hawker has 4.5%. We're told the sweet spot by David Teal is about 4.9%. The dividend calculation itself. Right now, you see that we're taking a percentage of the ERA, a percentage of royalties, and a percentage of the CBR. What calculation this committee would like is up to you. I flagged the final one as something that's bothered me since I sat on this committee years ago, which is the Constitutional Budget Reserve and its investment. I think it's ripe for consideration about how we invest it and how we could make it go to work for us. Just a couple more slides on each of these, drilling down individually as I wrap up. Why do I like the percentage of market value? First, it's tried and true. Over decades, Madam Chair, as you know, in different places on the earth, latitudinal, Arctic-based, whether it's public policy use or private sector use, these models work. It's based on hindsight. I always feel smarter when I'm looking in the rearview mirror, both good choices and bad. The sovereign wealth model is an annuity-based model, so fundamentally it requires foresight. It requires predicting into the future 25 years. Revenue limitations, as I pointed out, they dramatically reduce the volatility in the budget. However, as I flagged right away, as amended in Senate State Affairs, the current language does not limit revenue when oil revenues exceed $3.5 billion, should it. On the percentage itself, it is sustainable around 5%, as you know, Madam Chair. There's a question right now in the current way the bill has been drafted. Should it include a portion of the dividend? The current bill excludes, again, as you saw in the modeling, God bless you, 15% of the statutory net index of the earnings reserve account and 2% from the CBR and 4%. What that materially amounts to in David Teal running numbers is more like a 5.2% draw. So this is just something for the committee to look at again. Dividend calculations, we're now to the fourth of the last policy considerations. The current bill holds the 2016 dividend harmless, or status quo. And that was by request of members of the legislature, both in the House and the Senate, as a starting place. There are two things here I want to point out. The bill right now guarantees a $1,000 dividend, and the bill right now does not materially change the dividend that will be paid out for 2016. As we all know, the permanent fund has already put that money into a separate holding account. These are policy calls for this committee. As you know, as revenue continues to go down, we got the revenue forecast out yesterday. When you look at bullet two, that begins to mean a little more. The material difference between holding the dividend harmless and changing it to the structure in 114 is $750 million. And I would just point out, interestingly enough, for those who were here to vote, I personally voted against the energy rebate and said so and why on the floor. But the energy rebate proposed by Governor Sarah Palin, amounted to almost that same amount. And if you kind of go back and think about it, it's almost $1 billion. It's about the amount we inflation proof the permanent fund every year. It's a big chunk of money, and at one point, if you'd have added four of those years together, you would have had the basic money for an infrastructure for a gas line. So the longer we wait to make these decisions, the quicker we run out of choices to grow the economy. Okay, let's see here. Dividend calculation, current bill, you already know this. The committee could consider a flat dividend amount. The public tends to center around $1,000 as an appropriate place, whether you refer to it as a guarantee or a cap. So a better formula you might come up with that also uses royalties and a percentage of market value. What I would encourage you to consider, again, just humble little me thinking about it, whatever way you do it, whether it was the first method in 114, which is strictly royalty-based, or whether it's the current method in amended 114, that you begin to track, have the dividend track the fiscal health of the state. And that we, as lawmakers sitting here in 2016, if we're going to agree that we're going to keep a dividend, that we do it responsibly by creating it in a way that has a logical link to where it's coming from, so that new Alaskans and future Alaskans understand the value of it and understand that it's not an entitlement, it's a share of resources, and they're partnering with the state. But again, Madam Chair, as you know, people use this dividend in their own personal lives to fund very important things, health bills, et cetera. We know that. But the state government itself, in its most basic skeletal form that it's getting down into as we cut, also funds basic services. It also is that lifeline to communities and the Marine Highway. It is that basic road system that we all drive on. It's the police and fire that we depend on. And none of us really want to go back, I don't think, to those days where we're standing at the edge of our property with our guns, having to defend ourselves every day. So I just encourage people to really consider that when you say, don't touch my dividend, and that state spending is only for the government, that you really, really go on that journey to see that state spending at the government level and your dividend are both benefits to Alaskans. Both. So final slides, Madam Chairwoman, is the CBR investment. I've thought for a long time that you could invest the CBR at a higher rate than what it is. And actually, if you go back and look at some of these other revenue proposals that are out there, you could get to some of them. You could knock some of them out by simply increasing the percentage of return that you get back on the CBR. We are already allowed to under Title 37. 37-10-430, again saying that the Department of Revenue can transfer management of the fund to the Permanent Fund Corporation if it decides to. And that's something for you to consider. Again, this is a glide path, and I would take any questions that you have, and I appreciate your time. For somebody like me that talks a lot and tries to cram too much in, I hope I did a better job and trying to respond to what you wanted to, Madam Chair, but I bet if I cut 50% out, you would have been happier. So thank you for allowing quirky me to continue to exist here in the Senate.
Senator McGuire, we appreciate all the effort that you've put in. I would like to ask and have it restated for the general public. When did you first introduce a bill that would address this issue?
Excellent. Thank you for that question. So in January of last year, in my office, we began modeling, and we filed it in April of last year. And this is a really important point. I clarified it in the House Finance Committee, but to clarify on the record, another, if there are a few criticisms out there, is did GCI or the unions or corporations come together and get Senator Lisa McGuire or the Senate or anyone else to introduce a bill? And just to be very clear, we started in our office in January. Only state employees and our Department of Revenue people have been involved in the calculation of it. In August, an interesting thing happened to me, Madam Chair. Ron Duncan came to me, Jesse Logan and I, to come visit with him. He had been a part of the governor's cabinet of 34 or 5 Alaskans from a cross sector. They'd been looking at ideas, and on page 42 was a copy of 114. He liked it and asked what people in the public could do to help generate awareness. And whether you think it's been a benefit or a setback, I said, the more information about it, the better. And so you have groups out there, Madam Chairwoman, that have been individually talking about ideas like 114 to promote the idea of closing the gap. So thank you for that question.
Senator McGuire, I just wanted to make sure that I restated on behalf of the efforts that you and your team have made that you recognized trying to come up with a solution and proposed one prior to anyone else. And so I just wanted to recognize that you were trying to start that dialogue last year and that your team has been working collaboratively with a number of people, not only the private sector, but specifically the administration, Representative Hawker, the Permanent Fund Board, and that with all respect, Alaska is facing a huge issue, and you have been gathering people together to try to come up with a solution. So I thank you publicly. Senator Dunleavy, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Senator, two things. One is, that was a pretty good presentation. You didn't miss a beat. You didn't miss a beat at all. Does this document have to catch up with some changes that may have occurred recently, some of the language in here?
No.
Senator McGuire, the spring forecast came out yesterday. I believe that's what Senator Dunleavy is referring to. So there's another $300 million worth of foregone revenue in the new forecast and $600 million for FY18. Is that it, Senator Dunleavy?
Yes, through the chair. And it's not a gotcha. It's just I know that's been going through a number of committees. A number of people have had their fingerprints on it. I'm just wondering if the document we're looking at right now, if there's any language changes or any other changes that need to take place to update it.
Okay, and through the chair, I'll let Jesse Logan answer, but broadly speaking, Madam Chair, you're right that the general dollar figures, and again, when you look at this presentation, a reminder that their general dollar figures would have to reflect the spring forecast, But roughly speaking, and that's what was taking a little longer in my office this morning, we did change the presentation to materially reflect the three major changes that came in the Senate State Affairs Committee. That is a different way of creating downward pressure or an appropriation limitation. That is generally reflected in here. The other change was the review period and the inflation-proofing measure. So those are all generally in here, but I'll let Jesse Logan, and I want to publicly thank my chief of staff, Jesse Logan, for all of his hours, and just also want to say on the record once again so that he can get razzed. We both have cried over this situation. This is an inside thing that's kind of funny. We were in the House Finance Committee, and we were talking, and I thanked him on the record and said, this is such a serious issue. I hope everyone sees it. And I said, you know, we've cried over this. It's our future. It's our state. And his phone just started lighting up with people saying, I can't believe you cried. So on the record, I want to say, yes, he has. And thank you, Jesse Logan, for all of your work that you've done on this. And Suzanne Cunningham is over here on the left side. People get to see the Senate staff at work, I think all of you, but they don't always get to see the other staff that are working on. I want to thank them publicly.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. If I could do two things, because we would like to get to a sectional analysis. On the slides, there's one of them for sure that, Senator John Levy, that the bar chart that goes horizontally across the page, that would go down in Senator McGuire's presentation. So the revenue coming in, we would have more troubles. So there is some minor adjustments that would need to be made to accurately reflect the new spring forecast. Mr. Logan, are you? Please introduce yourself. Provide some brief opening comments. We would like to get to the sectional analysis to walk through the mechanics of what the bill does.
Thank you. For the record, Jesse Logan, Chief of Staff to Senator McGuire. Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, you're correct. The models and the bar graphs that you're referring to were modeled at $50 a barrel oil, and we didn't have time to adjust to the $40 forecast that came out yesterday. So you could take all of those lines and just kind of squish them down a little bit. The fundamental relationships remain the same. Your second question about whether or not there were some language changes that needed in the bill, absolutely. There are several places where there are drafting errors, and some of the recent changes made the mechanics not fit together quite well, but I think that they're easily solvable. The concepts are fairly sound. If the committee likes them, we can certainly work on changing those. Madam Chair, if you'd like me to start going through the sectional, I'm pleased to do that.
Are there other questions for Senator McGuire? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on slide 13, I wonder if you could find out where the other 1% is that you're distributing out of royalties. You have a 0.5% to the public school trust, 60.5% to the general fund, which is 61%, 25% to the principal, that's 86%, and then you have 15% royalties to the dividends for 101%. So just where would that other 1% come from?
Senator McGuire, I'm sure that
matter, but in the bigger scheme of things, that's a huge deal.
Right. We want to make sure that it's accurate for the general public. So, Mr. Logan, if you could take a look at that.
Answer that today, though.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that was a typo.
We should answer it right now.
Okay. See, can you correct? Do we know which number is off?
Sure. It is the percentage going to the general fund. That should be 59.5. My apologies.
59.5. Thank you.
Thank you.
Better to answer right at that moment it's brought up.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator McGuire or Mr. Logan, I'm not sure who would answer the question for me. You just give me an approximate amount as you look at the slide 13 as well. How much is the 4.5% of the percentage of market value expected to be that would be going to the general fund? An idea? A range?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Olson. So, again, that's going to be based on the forecasting. Exactly. So, it was modeled based on the original forecast, and thanks for the question, Senator Dunleavy. The revenue, the percentage of market value was about $2.25 billion under the original proposal. Now it would have to be reduced to reflect that $300 million drop.
Senator Olson, follow up.
So just over $2 billion. One last question, Madam Chairman. If this bill was to pass, I guess, how much deficit would remain in the state's budget that we'd have to go ahead and tap into for the savings or taxes if they are passed, or an additional cuts to the, or additional cuts to the budget?
Yeah,
do you have an idea what the remainder would be?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, this is a great question. I want to answer it by saying it's a moving target. This is, again, this is very simplistic modeling, but just in answering it to see the percentage from savings, revenues, et cetera. We already talked about the revenue problem there in black. Reduce that a little or increase it if you're optimistic. And then there's the savings up there. So if you had $2.2 billion, then you would do the math and subtract that from the 3.6. Again, we've also put more downward pressure on the budget, Madam Chair, through your leadership and that of the co-chair in this committee, so you could drop the blue line down a little bit. But for whatever amount that gap is that we're pulling from savings, at one point it was just a little above $1 billion, and I liked that because I was able to see how you could make some changes to some oil tax policy, credit policy, and pull in some other small revenue-raising ideas, and that you could close it. It's a moving target based on the fact that the spring forecast has come out, and we don't know what the revenues will be.
Senator McGuire, would it be fair to say that in round numbers, the bill before us would bring in and generate about $1 billion worth of revenue to offset any deficit that would remain?
I would like to say it's closer to two.
I thought that's what I said, $2 billion.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Exactly.
My colleagues are saying I said one. I was thinking two.
But exactly. That's exactly the way I think about it, again, in round numbers, is that it's $2 billion. And so for whatever place you then put the downward pressure, filling in that gap, you get the difference.
No further questions, Madam Chairman.
Are there any other questions for Senator McGuire before we proceed with the sectional? Senator Michicki, followed by Senator Bishop.
Slide 18, please, I think is a better illustration.
That's the one I'm talking about.
On the left, if you were to draw a line of expected revenue at some expected oil price, it's going to be, so if you wanted a sustainable budget at what we're spending today, which of course we know we're going to have downward pressure on that when possible, but if you, you know, drew something across on the $1 billion line, the blue that's remaining is the gap.
That is exactly.
And that's another conversation, but that is a picture of a relatively sustainable budget, but of course it includes revenue from Alaskans and industry and other sources of revenue as well, but it's a good way to put your eye on essentially what the bill does and what's remaining for a gap.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator McGuire, good job as always. Question that the, I'm just going to call it the Coghill Amendment. Does that make the dividend payment to the individual Alaskan more like a share, pure shareholder dividend that you would get it in the market?
That's a great question. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the original version, the short answer is, I think it does in concept. For taxation purposes, unfortunately, the opinion we have from Ledge Legal is that it would still be taxable by the federal government when you're just thinking about taxation. The original bill, which paid out a dividend purely from royalties, I really thought, and I want to give a shout out to Senator Stoltz's team on that for raising that issue. I thought it would be a pure share, and that arguably the federal government couldn't tax it. But our opinion, our legal said no. But yeah, I think so. I think that this is a way to describe to neighbors that Alaskans are receiving a share of the non-renewable resource in the ground on an annual basis, and they're sharing that with the state government. So 15% of the royalties, that's the future part that I like, because that engages every Alaskan in the fiscal health of the state as we look at future changes to oil tax policy, as we look at a gas line and things like that. But then 15% of the earnings reserve account, that engages Alaskans in the past and the current investment of that permanent fund principle that's been there then since 1976.
Thank you.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you look at slide 13, I was prompted again to reminded to look at the bottom right where you talk about the calculation of the dividend, where you've got 2% of the CBR. As the CBR, I'm assuming that as the CBR goes down, you're going to have a decrease in the amount of the dividend. And if it goes down, if the calculation goes down below $1,000, what are the backup plans to try and backstop that or try and protect it?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Olson. Great question. Part of why I included the slide on the potential to grow the CBR more, the way we see it under this model is you would go into the earnings reserve account after depleting the, if you depleted the constitutional budget reserve at 2%. We were hoping it could be sustained at 2% with a little bit of tweaking to the growth of it. And again, this is a policy call for the committee, whether you want to keep a CBR. I started out by saying one of the principles I had in mind was keeping it simple. So I kept every single pool of money the same way it is. And you know that there are people that like the CBR and people that don't. Minority members certainly feel, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, certainly feel that is a place for them to exercise a little bit more power in the decision-making process. That's the way I would phrase it. There are other ways people could phrase it if they'd like, but that's the way they've explained it to me. If you didn't want to have the CBR included, of course you could consider a one-time absolving of that and pull it in, but the way we keep it in this model, it's 2% of that. We expect it to be a part of all the political conversations in the future, and we expect it to grow and be sustainable. But the answer to your question specifically is it would come from the ERA.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. No further questions.
Senator Machicki.
That is an important call. I mean, you know, arguably, with continued downward pressure on the operating budget, we're likely within 10 years of a fully sustainable draw without taxes on Alaskans, right? And leaving the CBR out of this equation lengthens that period of time. So it's, unless I'm not understanding this correctly, is something we need to think about. That's a nice chunk of earnings. Anyway, that's something we'll be discussing over the next few days, I suppose.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just throw this out for everyone to think about, something I've surely been thinking about for a long time. This model, the governor's model, or a model yet to be determined that depends upon a healthy oil and gas and mining industry to feed the top of the beast to keep kicking out these dividends. I ask people to think about as we look at these proposals, to look out to 2030, look at your production and where production is, and I think we should be looking at that, and I think we should be doing the mechanics now to take care of ourselves out to 2030. So what that looks like yet, I don't know, but I think I'd like to see us dive into that a little bit.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through the chair. Senator, on page slide 12, you have a percentage going to the public school trust fund. What was the rationale behind diverting money to the trust fund and the percentage that you came up with?
Could you repeat that question?
Sure. On page 12, there is a money being sent to the public school trust fund. Mm-hmm. So the question was, what is the rationale, or what was the reason behind that, and what was the rationale behind the percentage?
Thank you, through the chair.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies, anticipating you calling on me. Senator Dunleavy, there's no material change to the public school trust fund. It was put in place in 1972 at 0.5%, and it continues to exist under the current bill, and there's no material change to that percentage.
Senator Dunleavy, there was a lawsuit, land, something similar to the mental health trust land, and so to fulfill our obligation to the federal government in providing for the people of Alaska through education, the federal government agreed to a 5% royalty, and so that is in law. And I believe on the governor's bill, we spoke about that briefly yesterday. can I bring someone from legal to the table in the future?
No, I understood the history. I understood what was there. I was just wondering, you put it on here because it's been in law and it's existed. My question, I guess, really was, were you looking at any change at all? Did you contemplate any change at all to the amount going into the public trust fund?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, not in this bill, but I have in the past, to be fair, because I thought that is the largest or one of the largest chunks of government expenditures, and I've thought, much like the CBR, you could make it work more for you, knowing that you always have that output. You could link it to the foundation formula, but under this bill, there's no material change at all.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator McGuire?
Oh, and sectional, right?
Are there any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, I have one. On slide 13, Mr. Logan, when we talk about the 2% CBR and the mechanics of that, inside of your sectional analysis, then do you talk about how that would be voted on? Would it have to be voted on annually because you can't commit or bind future legislative bodies? And will it require a three-quarter vote as every other CBR draw would require? So just the mechanics on using the formula for the 2% that's extracting from the CBR.
Sure. Thank you for the question. Again, for the record, my name is Jesse Logan, Chief of Staff to Senator McGuire. Madam Chair, the 2% of the CBR is actually drawn from the ERA. It's just a calculation of the total value of the CBR. So the idea here is that we're attaching the value of the dividends to three things: the long-term fiscal health of the market, the ERA, the short-term fiscal health of the state, the royalties, and then the long-term fiscal health of the state, the CBR, but it actually physically comes from the ERA.
So it's a calculation versus a draw.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I have a cold, and I'm having trouble hearing, actually, this morning, so I'm trying. Thank you for my committee to help keep me on my toes. Senator Machicki, do you have a question?
I just have one more, if you can go to slide 10. So this is a philosophical question for Alaskans, and what I'm going to ask you, Senator McGuire, is in what you've been hearing, and we all get emails about use of the permanent fund, and they don't differentiate between the earnings reserve or the fund, and I'm not sure that's always fully understood, but what the permanent fund dividend is Alaskans' share of mineral wealth, because as Alaskans, most of us don't have any subsurface rights. Do you think that Alaskans can see, if we have a responsibly budgeted government, we keep the downward pressure on, are you seeing that people consider state services as part of that royalty? Or do you see continued resistance that essentially they'd rather have the cash?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I thank you for the question. I mean, I think that's the heart of everything we're talking about. I mean, I've given you the mechanisms contained in 114, and again, I want to point out they're not original. We put a bucket of things together that have been voted on and considered in the past to achieve a solution at dividing some of the earnings off of this large asset that was put into the Constitution years ago to benefit future generations, both because we didn't have the opportunity, most of us as individuals, to derive private return because we decided it would be a state sharing, and also because the most important, in my opinion, principle, we knew that it was a non-renewable asset, and that if we wanted an Alaska that would exist for thousands of years, that we would have to find a way to share that wealth intergenerationally. Do I believe that Alaskans are understanding now that basic government services are important and worth sharing in? Yes. The short answer is yes. When we started on this journey, and part of the reason I took it on as well, is because, you know, I sit down at the beginning of every year and say, what's the most important thing that hopefully I can solve and maybe nobody's talking about yet? But also, I thought, I can afford the political risk right now to go into this early. And I would say that in April and through the summer, it was pretty hard trudging. People were very angry at me. and they didn't understand that the bill had a dividend mechanism in place, and they really felt that the size and cost of government was still just a lot more bloated and that we hadn't saved anything or cut anything. I think the education campaign that all of you have been engaging in through your newsletters, the hearings that we've had, for as arduous as they might seem, have had an impact. And so now what we're hearing, again, is people in that stages of grief model are in the bargaining phase. In my opinion, most Alaskans are there. They understand that both because the private sector is interrelated to the health of the public sector, they also understand that without basic government services, they wouldn't really want to live in Alaska, so why would other young people come here and want to grow it? But I think, Senator Michiki, the short answer is Alaskans are willing to share, but I haven't heard very many. There's a small percentage of Alaskans that have said they don't care about a dividend at all, but I would say most would like to see a dividend of some amount. That's what I'm hearing.
Senator Michiki, follow up.
Madam Chair, I just think the question is over and above efficient and essentially constitutionally protected services, right? I mean, that's the question we have to ask ourselves. Do we still have services, that are subtracting from what dividend wealth does in our economies, which is very important. It's very important in the Alaska economy. I think that's a question we have to continue. Whether or not this bill or a similar bill passes this year, that pressure has to remain on us. We can't take it as a buy to stay where we are at the level of our government and the services we're delivering. We have to continue to reevaluate those as a prime responsibility to Alaskans. And I think it's
Madam Chair,
just an important philosophical question.
Senator McGuire. One last point on that I think is so that the best part of everything that's happened in this process, and again, because this bill didn't purport to close the gap, the best part is the dialogue that you now see between Alaskans and their elected leaders in saying, what is the appropriate size and cost of government? What services do we need? Some might need to be expanded based on changes that have happened. Some may be dinosaurs, irrelevant to us. Some, as you've considered here in this committee, could be consolidated. Madam Chair, you've led the way on a variety of those enterprise agency conversations. But at least we're having the conversation now about that. And I think one last thing that could have been incorporated into this but would have made it too long is the modeling that's going on from the Institute of Social and Economic Research, which shows this point that you're getting to, which is how are these dollars affecting the economy? And that's really where the Senate Finance Committee gets to think about that. If it's a dollar that goes into a government job, how does that materially spread out, particularly if it's a government job in rural Alaska versus urban Alaska? Or that dollar that goes into the dividend, how does it circulate and benefit? They both circulate, they both have an impact. So when you pull one up or pull one down, of course we know we're affecting the economy. And of course what we'd like to do, I think, overall is meaningfully, fund basic core services, keep downward pressure so that we're continuing to look at how we want the government to be funded in the future and the size of it, give some dividend, and then stabilize the perception that Alaska is going off the fiscal cliff. And that's the thing, Madam Chair, that keeps me awake at night. When I see the article in the ADN today, this young engineer that's saying he's going to leave the state, I have heard neighbors starting to talk the way they did in the 80s about selling their homes. And because we're so small as a polis, 735,000 people, we talk to each other and we feel these things, this chilling effect. And so I want us to walk away this session with a solution that Alaskans can feel confident in, that they know there's going to be some dividend and some material closing of this gap so we can move on to the next steps. Those will be harder for you guys to think about how you want to consolidate state services and so forth. But I appreciate the question. I think it's the heart of what we're doing.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Mr. Logan, could you take us through a sectional on version T, We have the committee substitute for the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 114, a State Affairs and Act relating to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, the earnings of the Alaska Permanent Fund, the earnings reserve account relating to the Mental Health Trust Fund, relating to deposits into the dividend fund, relating to the duties of the Commissioner of Revenue, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Logan.
For the record, Jesse Logan, Senator McGuire's Chief of Staff. In this committee substitute from State Affairs, there is a repealing provision after 3 years, so several of these sections are repealing, and I just wanted to put that out front. Section 1 pertains to the percentage of royalties that go from our total royalties to the permanent fund corpus itself. In the early 80s, it was carved out between two sections, the Beaufort Sea and the North Slope, being different percentages, and we reduced all those to the constitutional minimum of 25%. Section 2 repeals Section 1, effective in 2019. Section 3 is one of the hearts of this bill, and it is the new way to calculate the dividend that we've discussed. It's page 2, line 25 through page 3, line 8. And it creates this new calculation of 15% of the ERA's statutory net income, 2% of the constitutional budget reserve, and 15% of the rents and royalties. The way that it is written in the bill is 15% of the royalties that go to the general fund, so it would actually be 15% of the 59.5%, and that was a drafting error. Section 4, page 3, line 10 through 29 is the other big heart of this bill. It does two things. It directs the Permanent Fund Corporation to determine the amount available for distribution. This section had previously been used only for the amount of, available for distribution to the dividends, and now that we are moving money in different ways, it's been altered. So it calculates a 4.5% market value over the earnings for the last five fiscal years immediately preceding the fiscal year just ended. And what that does is it provides a one-year lag so that if when the legislature comes into session in January, they'll already know, and they'll have known for several months, what the amount available is. The second part is there is the revenue limitation that Senator McGuire spoke of. For every dollar over $1 billion received from oil revenue, the percentage or the dollar for dollar amount of the PONV is reduced. So this basically is a way to say that if we have excess earnings from oil revenue, we don't also take it out of our savings at the same time. I believe there's a drafting error here as well, which I'm happy to work with the chairwoman's staff with.
Madam Chair, on the record, say too that if you hear that, it sounds kind of strong to the public, and I get nervous about that. Frequently in our drafting process, as you know, it's an art form. We're working back and forth with them, and our philosophical concepts have to be put into formulas in very complicated ways. And we will ultimately, you will ultimately here in this committee get every I dotted and T crossed, but we wanted to get this committee substitute to you guys in time, to the Senate Finance Committee in time, since you had put that budget forward earlier. And the two places he's discussing were amendments that came in. We wanted to respect our Senate colleagues that really thought that these were good ideas and get them in, but we'll work with David Teal and your drafting and all of that, should you like the concepts, to make sure they're perfect. I just feel like that word is really strong, and I don't want people to lose faith in the product.
Jesse Logan, Senator McGuire's Chief of Staff. Section 5 repeals Section 4, effective 2019. Section 6 is fairly short, and it directs the Permanent Fund Corporation to deposit to the earning reserve income as it is realized and received, except for income deposited to the general fund. Previously, only income that was considered from the permanent fund could only be used for the earnings reserve account. Now we make the allowance to deposit some of it as a POMV draw to the general fund. Section 7 repeals the previous section. Section 8 is a statutorily defined mechanism for inflation proofing. This was discussed in the slideshow. And this basically says that if the permanent fund corporation would like to if the legislature would like to allow the Permanent Fund Corporation to transfer money from the ERA to the principal of the account, the ERA total must be four times the amount of the POMV draw. So this creates a 4-to-1 coverage spread between the amount of money that we're using on an annual basis for government services. If there's excess, then it can be used for inflation proofing the corpus.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Does that include capital money as well, or just operating?
I apologize. We repeat the question.
Mr. Logan, when we have a capital budget and an operating budget, I believe Senator Hoffman is saying, what are you basing your figures on? Is it on the operating budget, or is it a combined total of the two?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman is combined this to the general funds.
Thank you.
And how would that affect fluctuations in the capital budget? Because over the years, that has been how the state of Alaska has tightened up its spending.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I can answer that. And again, this is that alternative method of constraining spending versus the 110% original part of 114. But if you go back to this chart here, oopsies, that shows how it plays out. The short answer would be, I think politically, would be my answer, that as you know, we sit down and sort of look at the reality is that we're going to fund the operations first. Madam Co-Chair, you know this as the co-chair for the capital budget, but sometimes we'll decide we'll make a match for the capital budget, and sometimes we'll decide that if there's a little extra, we'll allow for money in the capital budget. If you see right on slide 21 here, I pointed out that if we get back up to $3.5 billion in production taxes, you could see there that the bill as it sits right now would allow for a lot of changes and a lot of additions in capital spending.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know the operating budget is the most critical part that we need to address today, but with the second part of Section 4, it would seem that we would have very large downward pressure on capital and no way to address it unless there were some changes to this legislation. It would seem that for the distant future, a decade to two decades, we would have no capital budget.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I agree with you that adding a spending limit provision into Senate Bill 114 or any percentage of market value has the downside of constraining the legislature's ability to make judgment calls about infrastructure needs in the future, and that is a great topic for you all to consider as you move forward. I attempted in the last committee to address the concern that the public testimony there elicited, which was, well, you guys are going to restructure the dividend program, the permanent fund itself, and then what happens when oil prices rebound and or volume rebounds? Will you just go on a spending spree? And I push back the way you do, because I've served here 16 years and I see that there is value both in the operating dollar budgets and in the capital budgets. You think of ports and harbors, you think of roads to resources, all kinds of things that you, schools, the Moore decision. But so I would just say on the record, I agree with you that materially a spending limit decreases the legislature's ability to make capital budget decision-making choices.
Senator McGuire, it would probably just highlight this as a note for us to go back and review, thinking about a project that all Alaskans would like to see go forward, the gas line. How would that affect the operating budget in a negative way, because the gas line would take up spending differently? And so I think that a spending limit on the operating budget might be advantageous, but including total spend, what happens if the federal government decides to build a bridge or a port and they bring it through the state's capital or operating budget? That could limit in this way our ability to provide basic services. So we'll put that on the parking lot for us to review further. Absolutely understand why state affairs would want to hold down the operating budget and exponential growth there, but there might be an unintended consequence that we need to explore.
Thank you.
Mr. Logan, could you continue?
Thank you. Moving on, Section 9 repeals the previous section and returns it to the current statutory formation for inflation-proof impact of the CPI. Section 10 is simply holds the settlement from the Amaretta Hess harmless in the general fund deposits. Section 11 repeals Section 10. Section 12 does several things here. This is on page 7, lines 4 through 25. It's subject to legislative appropriation. It allows the Permanent Fund Corporation to deposit the amount available to distribution under Section 4. That would be the POMV into the general fund. And then this section, subsections F and G are the review, the look-back period that Senator McGuire discussed. It allows the Commissioner of Revenue to recommend adjustments to the dividend percentages and also directs them to deliver a report annually to the legislature based on the asset allocation and a review of the overall ERA.
Madam Chair, could I make one point on that I didn't make?
Senator McGuire.
As you consider that review period, please have Angela Rodell, Director of the Permanent Fund, give her opinion on this. We adopted it from the governor's plan. She has some concerns about it. I'd like them to get on the record. And I would just go back to, again, when I sat on the Senate Finance Committee, there could be a parallel to retirement. The way that we used to do our PERS, TERS, and I just want you to think of that in the back of your mind where there's the pros and the cons. The cons might be that when you do these review periods and you ask the legislature to interject itself, sometimes you politicize it, and arguably, you know, we have the Mercer problem, but arguably, if we all wanted to be honest, I think that we knew that health care costs were going up. The legislature did, each individual governor did, but nobody wanted to be that person politically that had to be the bearer of bad news to individual Alaskans to have to increase their match. That's certainly part of what the process was. So I just want to acknowledge that there could be a downside to it.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator McGuire, I'm glad you brought it up. I was going to bring it up a little bit ago because I asked the other providers yesterday that same question. Does this change the investment strategy of the permanent fund? And I could go on for 30 minutes riffing on just what you just talked about, but I won't. But I'll just leave it at that for right now.
We have had the director of the permanent fund before us already, and we have meetings planned as we go forward. Mr. Logan, could you finish the sectional analysis for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 13 makes a conforming amendment to clarify that the net income from the Mental Health Trust Fund is not included in the computation of income available for distribution under Section 4. Section 14 repeals the previous section. Section 14 conforms to Section 4 so that the net income of the permanent fund continues to be computed annually as of the last day of the fiscal year in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles and excludes unrealized gains or losses. Section 16 repeals Section 15. Section 17 makes conforming amendments to determine the value of the dividend under Section 3 of the bill. Section 18 repeals Section 17. Section 19 allows the legislature to appropriate from the earnings reserve account any necessary funds to maintain a dividend of a minimum of $1,000. Section 20 states that unexpended appropriations to implement the act lapses into the dividend fund at the end of the fiscal year and may be used in determining the amount of and paying the subsequent year's dividend. Section 21 repeals Section 20. Section 22 repeals current Statute 3713-145B. The next sections, Section 23 is basically the sunset clause, and this would take effect in 2019. It would also hold, well, I guess this transition. It repeals all the previous sections that we talked about. Section 24 is transition language, and this is where we hold the 2016 dividend harmless, and so we'd be paid under a status quo calculation, and it allows the Commissioner of Revenue to adopt regulations. Section 25 is additional transition language that if it is repealed in 2019, the dividend would be calculated under this new formula, so there would be a year lag, again going back to what is now the status quo, and allows the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of the Permanent Fund Corporation to adopt regulations. Section 26 is retroactivity. Section 27 is effective date. Section 29 pertains to Section 24, which is 2016's dividend, and Section 26, which is the retroactivity of that dividend going in 2019. And Section 29 makes the effective date of this bill July 1, 2016.
Thank you, Mr. Logan. Are there questions from committee members on the sections in the bill? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 4, sunset clauses, Section 23. In your presentation, you talked about protecting the dividend. But here you are, and then up in another section, you're setting the minimum at $1,000. That was under Section 19. But under 23, you sunset that, and there are no more minimums. And it would seem that the presentation of you saying that you're protecting the dividend are erased by the sunset clause.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I would agree with that assessment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For Alaskans who are at home listening to the sectional analysis, and Mr. Logan, you started with this bill would be repealed after 3 years. Can you tell Alaskans what that means in simple terms?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a sunset clause similar to other sunset clauses that we have for programs, for commissions, for boards, and it allows basically a review period. The legislature would have to extend the effective date of the bill or repeal the sunset provisions within it to keep a program going forward. So it's almost, you can think of it as a way to experiment.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair. Madam Chairwoman, I think the question from Senator Hoffman elicits the most important concern about sunsetting what the Senate Finance Committee might do in this bill, which would be the guarantee of a $1,000 dividend or whatever dividend program you have. So if you want to look at what the impact would be if it were sunsetted, you would bring yourself right back to where we are today in the sense of not having a material change to the volatile distribution of assets from the permanent fund, which might put you in jeopardy of receiving dividends if you're an Alaskan, and would certainly put the government in a precarious situation of not receiving the revenues, the $2 billion we talked about that would come from the formula. Mr. Logan's right that sunset provisions, you know, they have a wind-down period, so you reach the three-year point and then you'd have the conversation, but they do tend to interject crisis and political strife because at that moment people are uncertain about that, and I would just say as you think about a net benefit could be that you are experimenting, as was indicated, but a net setback could be that you're not providing stability in this moment where you're making those tough decisions. And if one of the goals is to stabilize bond ratings and to give certainty to the private sector that Alaska is on the road, that might be something that sits out there for them as an uncertainty.
So I always think about my grandson. Since I'm away from home for 3 months, that it's his opportunity to see grandma. And so sometimes my daughter-in-law puts him in front of the TV. And even though he's probably not old enough to understand, there might be folks out there that do. So in simplistic terms, the bill that's before us would change the payout on the dividend for a period of time, and then it would revert back to how it is currently being paid, which may be of comfort to some Alaskans, but for policymakers would throw us right back into this conversation if, as the forecast suggests, that we would be in a downward market for a longer period of time. So just for clarity, there are absolutely different ways that we can all look at these things. And it's also fair to say that the legislature can look at a statutory change every year and bring that forward to a seated governor to propose additional changes. So I just want to be clear about all the repeal languages, that there's an idea that's been proposed in SB 114, and a previous committee believes that we should go back and relook at that just in case we get it wrong. And so I think that's a valid consideration for all of us to look at. But simplistically, that would take us back to currently how the dividend is paid out. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On that point, what is your perspective as you're ramping up and then having to ramp down? The 3 years might not be long enough to go ahead and see if this really is the silver bullet that takes care of our financial situation.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the original version of the amendment had only 2 years, and I asked if it could be doubled for that exact reason. I thought 2 years was absolutely too short.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think Madam Chair said it exactly right. There are valid points on both sides. For me, the issue is that in 16 years, I have always known that there was going to be a time and a need to fundamentally restructure the way that we fund our budget because it was too volatile. And I just, you know, I've told the story, I came in my 20s, and I knew that it didn't seem logical that you would just look at a commodities index evaluation on a probabilistic way and say, okay, that's the size of our budget. And you would watch it go up and down and up and down and up and down, not really reflecting the current needs. So I think this is needed no matter what. And I would respectfully say that you shouldn't sunset the program. That would be my opinion, because I think you should not only let it have a chance to work, but I think this is the future. You're going to have a percentage of market value no matter what. But as Madam Chair said, if there are aspects of it, for example, the guarantee of the $1,000 dividend or some other parts that you would want to tweak the way we do oil taxes all the time, you could come back statutorily and do that. But I do think you're right. I think with, you know, there's a concern that you don't give it enough time to materially change the stability of the government with the sunset.
Senator Olson.
Last comment, Madam Chairman. I just want to thank you for, and when you're on the Finance Committee and all the billions of dollars you put away into the CBR that we're now taking advantage of. And thank you, Madam Chairman. No further questions.
Are there other questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Just a comment. The legislation that you propose holds harmless the dividend for 16, so the dividend is only reduced for 2 years. And if you said 3 years, then we need to look at a full 3 years as a minimum if we want to get the 3 years or eliminate the hold harmless for 16.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Other questions or comments from members? Senator Michiki.
Just on that sunset philosophy, you know whether or not it's appropriate in this bill, we did that in the fuel tax bill, and I think it's the right message that we're going to reevaluate in 2 years, and we're not going to keep more revenue than we need, right? So we have a situation right now, it's not going to last forever. In the fuel tax bill, it went away at $85 for one fiscal year, and it sunsetted in two. I just think this legislature is going to have to get... Unfortunately, more used to having those discussions more often, but at least it proves to Alaskans that we're taking revenue very seriously in a way that has the least amount of impact to them. Anyway, just another way to think about that sunset philosophy.
Senator McGuire.
And you know this, I've met with each of you individually, but I just want to say overarchingly on the record, I trust every member of this committee. You are good, good servant leaders. And I know that whatever balance you come up with is going to be great. I think that we need to make this change one way or the other. If the sunset provides people comfort in knowing that it will force the legislature to come back and review it, or if a review period does, or the combination, I am supportive. And so I just want to say that I may have individual perspectives about where they weigh on the pros and cons, but I don't assert them anymore.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, a little off the topic here, but Senator Dunleavy and I have been passing a copy of the Constitution back and forth, and within this discussion, I think we really need to get an idea of why we don't follow the constitutional spending limit. I've been told, we don't, and I've been told it's because it doesn't work, and frankly, I just believe that, and I don't know why. And I would like for this committee, if Madam Chair agrees, if we could have a constitutional lawyer who understands what they're talking about explain to us the ins and outs of that constitutional spending limit, because we may be in violation of it, and we've just never been challenged on it. I don't have a clue. I read it, it seems like it didn't seem that flawed to me, that it didn't seem obviously flawed that, we can't follow it.
to this. Thank you, Senator Kelly. Senator Dunleavy.
Briefly, and through the chair, and just right back to that, we're talking about in this conversation, where the reason it's come up is we're talking about downward pressure in the budget, how do we meet cap our spending and so forth, and so we've been having a little side conversation as part of this. And if you do look at 16 in the Constitution, article or section 16, it does talk about indices, it does talk about capping, it does talk about stopping based upon an actual amendment in 1982. So the people of Alaska have already, they were obviously looking further ahead than we were, and they tried to put some stops in here, but the issue is, why aren't we following it? Why is that not guiding, again, sorry, Senator, why it's not guiding some of these discussions in this time of need? So I would concur with Senator Kelly, if there's some way we can get somebody before us to explain what this really says and why, for whatever reason, it appears that we are not adhering to it.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy.
On the same lines, I could say the same thing about capital. There's constitutional provisions that say we have to spend a percentage on capital far more than what we're spending today, and I believe we should be following those as a
It too is in.
Senator Hoffman, I wish I had the money to spend more on capital, since that's my budget. But we're happy to take a look at the Constitution and provide the Finance Committee additional conversation for clarity on what our Founding Fathers anticipated, and then what our legal system and the courts have interpreted those lines to mean, which are sometimes very different. I would like to do a shout out for the Sturgeon case today. Alaska won. A single man fought an issue through the Supreme Court, and justice for Alaska was served. It's a happy day for Alaskans. I think my text opened up 8 years, Senator Bishop?
8-0.
All strong decision by the Supreme Court of the United States of America in favor of one individual's rights. It's a good day for Alaska, even facing tough times. Senator Kelly.
Since we went a little global here.
Constitution, Sturgeon.
Yeah. Just a quick point on that. It was remanded back to the lower court with pretty strong instructions. I think you can say that we won, but that there's still a little more on that. Poor Mr. Sturgeon's probably going to have to spend some more money.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
A little stormy rain cloud.
Yeah.
Anything else to come before the committee? Senator McGuire, Mr. Logan, thank you for that presentation.
Madam Chair, thank you to all your staff, too, particularly Laura Pierre and Brett, all of your team. Thank you. They've been amazing.
Thank you. Ms. Kramer is happy to help.
He made that decision.
Mr. Kelly. Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things that I haven't heard discussed in our conversations, either with the governor or through the committee process, or really even in the conversations between members, is kind of why we're here. I mean, there are a number of reasons. Obviously, the price of oil fell dramatically, but that's just the proximate cause. And our spending's too high, but that likewise is just the proximate cause. And the Sturgeon case, I think, brings something into our viewscape on this that we shouldn't forget. Silk-suited lawyers from the East Coast have been beating Alaska down successfully in the courts and through the regulation process for years, so that for us to develop our resources, we're a natural resource state, for us to develop our resources in some cases might as well be impossible. When I spoke with people from North Dakota, obviously they're having their own troubles now, but somebody owned a piece of land from the day that they agreed that they would lease the land to the company that was going to develop it for oil till the time that they were actually shipping oil was 30 days. Well, we speak in terms of 10 years. We don't speak in terms of 10 years just because it's cold up there, just because it's a logistical nightmare. Our people have overcome most of that. We speak in terms of 10 years because environmentalists stop us. They don't want Alaska developed. They've been successful. We're down to 500,000 barrels per day, not because of the price of oil, not because we spend too much, but because we have lost in courts and in regulations our ability to develop our resources, and that's kind of all we have.
Senator Machicki.
Just to play off the first part of your discussion, I highlighted that paper that I dug up from Mr. Goldsmith in the early 90s, and there's just that, it bothers me that if you think about where we could have been today had we heeded those principles and not grown government because of increased revenue, we would not be having these tough discussions because we would likely be sustainably funded. And that's, we will have an improvement on the price of oil. We have substantial savings, but unless when revenue increases, we have the discipline to keep spending on a sustainable level, we will find ourselves in the same position time after time after time. I think that's, for me, that's a really important message for today, is solving the problem right now, but also having the long-term view of how we keep from getting in this position again.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Senator Bishop.
Well, I'll just be the old broken record. We got a $2 billion deferred maintenance, and it ain't going to heal itself.
Any other comments from Senate Finance Committee members? Seeing and hearing none, on tomorrow's agenda, Wednesday, March 23rd, 2016, here in the Senate Finance Committee room, we'll hear from David Teal. He's the Director of Legislative Finance for the People of Alaska. We'll be reviewing, he'll be reviewing SB 114 and SB 128. In the afternoon, beginning at 1:30, we'll begin taking public testimony on SB 114 and SB 128. 1:30, Juneau. 215, Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, and Alaska. 245, Barrow, Tok, and Delta Junction. 315, Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg. 345, Sitka, Cordova, and Valdez. 415, statewide teleconference and off-net sites. On Thursday, March 24th, 2016, beginning at 9 a.m., public hearing will continue on SB 114, Permanent Fund Earnings Deposit Accounts, as well as SB 128, similar title. 9 o'clock, begins Anchorage. 10 o'clock, Glen Allen, Seward, Homer. 10:30, Fairbanks and Matsu. 11:30 a.m., Kenai, Kodiak, and Dillingham. Is there anything else to come before the committee? With that, we're adjourned.